Hi, this is WMUK. I'm Kara Lawrence. The Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck continues this Thursday and Friday with a program featuring baritone Mario Diaz Moresco and pianist Spencer Meyer. They'll perform songs from Schubert to Bolcom. When I spoke to Mario, he told me his musical interest began at a very young age.
I actually started singing when I was about 5 years old. My mom always tells the story that as soon as I started talking, I started singing. And from a very young age, I would, you know, my parents would take me to cultural events, and whenever there was something on stage, I would point to stage and be, I want to be up there. And so when I was very young, they helped me start taking voice lessons and piano lessons, and it just kind of kept going, and, you know, was a passion my whole life, and I ended up going to school for it, and I'm lucky enough that I get to do it all the time.
Is there a singing tradition in your family or a musical inclination there?
There is not. I'm told that my grandmother was a very good singer, but besides that, my father has a very natural voice, but he never studied or performed. So, yeah. Just kind of came out of nowhere.
a singer's voice takes time to develop, and sometimes categories of singing, this baritone and tenor and alto and soprano, can change for singers. Are you on a journey where that's concerned?
Well, I mean, definitely when I was a child, I was a boy soprano, and I performed professionally as a boy soprano until about the age of 12, and then my voice started to change. And that process was very traumatic for me, because singing was so natural to me that all of a sudden one day my high notes were gone. And, you know, that's what happens when young boy sopranos reach puberty. Their voices change very fast. And so there was like a 2 or 3 year period where I was kind of retraining my voice, and I worked with a great voice teacher who, you know, half the lesson we would work on what was left of my boy soprano voice, and then the other half of the lesson we would work on the baritone part of my voice that was coming in. But, you know, it is a process, and the voice, you know, doesn't really mature. Depending on the voice type, you know, like a light colorato soprano, she's going to mature, you know, earlier, in her earlier 20s, whereas, you know, her voice and bigger voices take a longer time. And so singing is a very long road. It's like writing. You just, you know, you never finish learning, you never finish working on your technique, and it changes as you get older. You find you have to do different things, you have to, you know, manage things in a different way, and so it's going to be something that that continues to progress my whole life.
What were some early opportunities that came along that also helped you develop as an overall artist, stage roles or productions where you got to work with people that pushed you?
Well, certainly being able to do opera still as a boy soprano. I performed with the San Francisco Opera and with Opera San Jose as a boy soprano. Those being exposed at a very young age to that world was very formative. But also in my studies and in performing as an adult, I was lucky enough to do the opera Dead Man Walking by Jake Heggie. And I worked a little bit with him on that. We did it at my university. That really formed me. And then also I studied a bit with the pianist and coach Margot Garrett at the Festival Song Fest in Los Angeles. And that experience really, I had always been drawn to art song, but it really was the game changer for me. It really showed me a way that I could make a life in art song. And how it can be just as fulfilling an evening of you know, storytelling and performance as any opera or stage work could be. And that festival, Song Fest, is amazing, because you get all of these incredible, you know, many of the great living composers come to that festival. Many of the greatest coaches and pianists come as well. And it's, you just sit and absorb all this information for about a month. And it's just one of the most exciting things out there for art song right now.
So I suppose immersing yourself in literature, in the song literature out there, is one of the things you really have to put on your plate in order to create an informed, entertaining, engaging, meaningful evening of song like you're going to bring to the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck.
Absolutely.
So it would that involve sight singing and or listening to recordings or?
There's that. There's definitely an aspect where you want to absorb the performance practices of you know any given composer or style or language, but most of it is language work. The vast majority of art song, of course there are many art songs in English, but most of them are in French or German, and it's very important for the singer to really do not only their diction work so that if a native speaker is there, that they can understand it, but that also that you color words in a certain way. If a word means a certain thing, you want that the sound that you produce and what you do with the consonants to reflect the meaning of the word. And so even if someone doesn't speak the language, which most audiences in this country, obviously don't speak those languages, that they can still understand what is happening by coloring your voice and by the way that you use the words. Between the language and the emotional connection, that's how you impart storytelling to an audience.
You're performing the same program on Thursday and Friday at the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck, and your musical partner is pianist Spencer Meyer. Would you tell me about your collaboration with Mr. Meyer?
Well, I don't know if you want to include this, but Spencer and I are actually partners. We're together. And on our first date, actually, we read through a bunch of art songs. We read through An die Ferne Geliebte by Beethoven and also Dichte Liebe by Schumann, which are very high romantic, pieces about love and about, about longing. So that was a very powerful first experience. But Spencer is a monumental pianist. He's one of the foremost pianists of his generation. And he, both in solo work, he does, I think he has about 10 concertos next season, solo recitals, as well as playing chamber music and with singers. But he's a formidable talent. And it's just, if you have a great pianist, all of a sudden things that were difficult are not difficult anymore. And he's a dream collaborator. And it's great that, we have a great emotional connection as well. So you can really feel that in a lot of our more intense pieces that we do. The audience can really feel that emotion. It just raises the energy level a bit more.
So echoes of Peter Pears and Benjamin Britten.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would think that it would be more common for there to be more couples collaborating, but you see time and time again in musical history these partnerships of people who live together, perform together, and they end up being these iconic figures because they had that extra energy going on between them and then consequently between the music and them and the audience. So yeah, I feel very lucky that I'm able to do that.
The program has been designed to allow Spencer to have some soloistic moments where, for example, he'll perform Ravel's Sonatine, and then when the program changes over to William Bolcom, he'll play some of those famous rags.
Yes, and actually he just recorded a CD of the Bolcom rags for the Steinway label. He's the Steinway artist. And that's going to be coming out sometime in the summer. I think it might be after we do after this week's concert, but it's a dynamite CD if anyone can get their hands on it. It's really special. Yeah.
One thing I skipped over was the two songs of Schubert that opened the program. Are these favorites of yours?
They are. Schubert is so special to the art song genre because he is the composer who elevated it into a serious art form. Before Schubert, Mozart and some of these other composers, they did write art songs, but they were more intended as concert pieces. It wasn't a genre unto itself until Schubert started writing art songs. So it's very special, and there's so much to choose from. So when you choose to do a Schubert set, it is invariably pieces that you love and that you hold very dear. Und forscht die Ärsch im Äther blau und füllt es neu erweckt, tränkt seine Rosse mit dem Tau, der Blumenkelche deckt, der Blumenkelche deckt. Schubert and the group of people that he collaborated with, they did these evenings called Schubertiads, which actually Spencer and I still have at our house. We will have friends over and, you know, have food and wine, and we'll all, you know, everyone will just bring their art song books and we'll just play through a bunch of stuff. The art song concert and form grew out of the salon, out of, you know, gatherings at homes, private concerts, that kind of thing. So, and before Schubert, you know, you would have them, you know, in a form of a concert, you know, there'd be chamber music and there'd be like maybe like one or two, you know, individual songs, or really they were like concert arias where they'd be a longer song. But it wasn't until Schubert that you had these individual songs that you could string together to create a whole evening. And then also the idea of song cycle, which actually Beethoven did first. And Beethoven wrote quite a bit of art song, but it wasn't until Schubert that it really became a serious genre after him. Other composers, it was a genre that they felt in order to be a serious composer that they needed to have a portion of their work be art song.
I think we should point out the second song you're singing, Die Forelle, has a very, has a special life in another piece.
Yes, in the chamber piece, yeah, for string quartet, or quintet, I believe.
Piano quintet, yes, called The Trout.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great story because it's just this little vignette of a man who's looking at a little brook, and he sees a trout in the brook, and he observes how joyful the trout is. And then halfway through the piece, he looks up, and on the other bank there's a fisherman, and he sees how the fisherman traps the trout, and it makes him very sad that such a beautiful thing was taken away from its natural place.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's a really cute little, it has this little joyous melody, but really the ending is quite sad.
Someone eats the trout.
Yes, yeah, yeah. He catches the trout and he sees the blood in the water. Yeah. Happy little trout song.
Let's talk about Shadow of the Blues. You mentioned working with Jake Heggie, who I believe is one of the foremost songwriters of our time. And is John Musto right up there as well?
Oh, yes, absolutely. John Musto is of a slightly older generation than Jake Heggie, but he is one of the great living composers that we have, along with William Bolcom. William Bolcom is also alive and well. And I have been fortunate enough to work on these songs with John. And first off, John is a monster pianist. He's one of those people that you, and William Bolcom is too. They sit down at the keyboard and it's like an extension of themselves. And these songs are very, very special. The poetry is by Langston Hughes. It's very emotionally intense. The second song is called Litany. And it's basically a litany for those among us who are less fortunate. And it's a gorgeous, it's one of the most gorgeous pieces, I think, of American music written in the 20th century. It's just a fabulous piece. The third piece, Island, deals with overwhelming emotions and trying to, and you can hear it in the piano music, it's this very fast kind of wind-like music, and it's about the person not succumbing to their emotions. And then the last piece is about a relationship gone wrong. And like, maybe you love me, maybe you don't. But, you know, I'm tired of it. So, and it's kind of fun and jazzy, and it's just a great little cycle. It's one of my favorite pieces in the whole repertoire. It's not always appropriate for all venues, but whenever we are able to do it, we do it because I think it's a very important piece, and I've found that audiences are very moved by it because it's very direct and it's very intense. Any place is
without my watch and you.
I'm glad we talked earlier about life partners and music partners, and you and Spencer, and William Bolcom and his wife, Joan Morris.
Yes, and also John and his wife performed together quite a bit as well. And Bill and Joan are just, when you see them on stage, it's one of the most amazing experiences.
Yeah.
You can just tell they are so connected, and they are such wonderful people, and they're just such natural commanders of the stage. The way that they control energy in a room is just incredible.
And
I've been lucky enough to work with both of them. I've been lucky enough to see both of them in concert a number of times, and it's just one of the most beautiful collaborations.
He lives where he wishes, when he wants, does the dishes.
The cabaret songs, they're just such amazing character pieces that if you really invest in the characters, you know, all these people that these songs talk about or the situations are all a little bit weird, a little bit strange. I mean, one of the songs, but there's one of the songs that talks about a woman who commits suicide at work, and it's done in a jokingly way. I mean, it's just these very odd and strange characters, and if you focus on bringing them to life, and on the inside jokes that are in the songs, then I think the text, you know, and the music speaks for itself. So.
Well, Mario, it's been a pleasure to get to know you a little bit, and I think audiences will just love your song recital with Spencer Meyer this week at the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk to you.